It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast as we're talking super regionals and a guy that's just downright super, Kyle from LaGrange, Florida. What's up, man?
What's going on, David? I don't feel so super, but if you want to call me super.
Yeah, if I ever have, I'll tell you how I feel.
Super.
If I ever have a territory in wrestling, I'm going to have Kyle from LaGrange Barber, and definitely, if nothing else, he'll be doing commentary on the broadcast. So,
well, that'll be super.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be great. It'll be super, right? Another super swell kind of OG whiz kind of guy, and that's Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Golly gee, Dave. Thanks for that swell intro. I just got home from my summer job, first ball game that I've worked, doing the PA and live stats for the Lake Norman Copperheads and the Southern Collegiate Baseball League, a league here in the greater Charlotte area that features some Division I players, but a lot of it's either lower level D1 JUCOs or some Division II, Division III players. So a good ball game for the first night out, and looking forward to watching the Pirates tomorrow against Louisville like a little kid on Christmas. So excited.
I don't think I'll be able to sleep very well tonight, but I'll do my very best. And the good news is, though, my kids are out of school, so I can actually – I don't have to get up at 6:30 in the morning. I'm so excited. I've got – speaking of vacation, I don't have to have a vacation of not having to get up between 6 and 6:30 every morning. So I'm very excited about that. Pumped up about the Pirates. And, Kyle, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
I know that you love to go first anyway, so how do you feel about this weekend? I know that a lot of people are anticipating this series evenly matched. How are you feeling?
I think we have a great chance to win it. I mean, Louisville's got a good team. They got a great program in recent history. You know, 5 supers out of the last 6 years, I believe.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I got a good feeling. Weather's going to be a big issue this weekend, potentially.
We can't have a regional, in this case a super regional, any kind of event for that.
Yeah, no kidding. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But I do think I think we're going to get it, dude. I think somehow, some way, the Pirates are going to be in Omaha, and for the first time ever, we're going to get it done. I really believe that. And, I'm not going to say it's going to be in 3 or it's going to be in 2 or that, we're not going to play any games until Monday and it's going to be a 1-game matchup, winner take all. Who knows?
Well, I wanted to say, Bubba, bring you in because when I saw the forecast, I was like, isn't this like – like great for the Pirates because we've done very well in doubleheaders. Will they allow a doubleheader? I want to ask you guys.
Absolutely, they will. In fact, I can give you some information.
All right.
Y'all did research, folks.
I stumbled upon something.
Wow.
When I did research, Bubba.
Breaking news. Kyle did research.
I didn't do any research. Don't kid yourself. There's actually. In the NCAA rule book, this is how things go, guys, if weather becomes too big of an issue. If one game is played of the series, the winner of that game will win the series. If 2 games are played in the series and it's tied 1-1, then the higher-seeded team, I hope I'm getting these rules right, the higher-seeded team will go. And that's if it's tied, if no games are played, if 1 game's played, if 2 games are played, whatever. If it's tied, series is tied, they can't get a game 3 in. If they've played 2 games or 0 games at this point, you see what I'm saying? The highest seeded team goes. Now this is the interesting part that I need some clarification on. There's a next step after that. It says if both teams are equally seeded. For example, if both teams are 1 seeds, then it goes to the highest RPI. So what I want to know is, the way that sounds, the 1 through 16 seeds are not considered in, is if you're both one seeds, which we are. Therefore, who's got the higher RPI, East Carolina or Louisville?
To be honest, I think it's us. I haven't checked since the tournament's been going on, but I believe we're fifth, and Louisville is like eighth or something.
Yeah, no, see, I found that very interesting, and because
that would make no sense to me. Like, why would you not go by the national seed?
But Bubba, I agree with you. But there's no way you could both be the same seed if they're going by the national seed, and that is exactly
of course
what
not.
The rule. That's
so
exactly.
In other words, that's kind of like a tie. In other words, what they're saying is the 1 through 16 is just it's not like an order. It's just a regional host site. You're all equal.
No, you're seeded. So
no, what I'm saying.
I would think it was the case if you were looking at a 2 seed versus a 2 seed or a 3 seed versus a 3 seed. You know where
right.
They aren't. Yeah, but with
well,
1 seed,
that
makes
case.
No sense.
Well, maybe that is the case. Because they actually did use that example, Bubba. They said a 2 versus a 2.
Yeah.
When they used the example. So you could be exactly right. That you may have just clarified that for me. And then
we're screwed.
Yeah.
That's a good question for Dr. Gary Overton. Coach O will be on the show
tomorrow.
So, Pirate Nation, stay tuned for a more clarified
I don't think that's going to be a problem, though. I don't think that's going to be a problem, Dave. Here's why.
We're going to win it.
No, here's why I don't think it's going to be a problem. Because you can play this thing all the way through Monday.
And that's what I was going to say.
And
Carolina,
I think the weather is going to be clear by Monday. So even if it's a one-game winner-take-all, we're going to get a game in. So every game's going to be important, guys, because let's say we get Friday in somehow. That may be the only damn game that gets played. Who knows?
Right, and you have a situation where my gut feeling is Agnos is going to throw out of his mind. He's going to that first game is going to be huge, and I think we have an edge. I think pitching is going to be pretty even.
Their starter's good too,
but I think that our hitting is just a little bit better than theirs. I really do.
Well, they get that lefty on lefty matchup. Their ace is a lefty. We got a lot of left hand bats.
I know that, but we've done very well against lefties too. I'm not knocking them. I'm not talking trash. I'm just confident in our team.
I think we can win it too. I think we will win it.
Yeah, I really do. I think you look at number. Day one is to me the first game. If you can win Friday, that's huge for us. And then
anytime you're the road team.
Yeah. If you can steal that game Friday, then it makes it a lot easier for Cliff. In fact, if you have Jake, if he can throw 6 or 7 innings in that range, if he throws 6 or 7 innings in that way, and then you have, like, Gavin or Bolivar, those guys, I mean, Cam Colmore, I mean, somebody to throw an inning or two and close it out, then game two, you can pretty much do pitching by committee. Or like Bubba and I were talking earlier, you could pretty much Cooch Maynard should be good to go for Saturday.
Yeah, we talked about that interview you'll hear later on with Corey Glore. We talked about the pitching situation, and it's one of those things. That's what Jake Agnos he has said that Coach Godwin has said that if Jake feels good, that he will be pitching tomorrow. And game one on Friday at noon against the Cardinals, and Jake Agnos said he feels good, so
he'll be pitching.
That's who you expect to see in that one, and then I fully expect to see Cooch Maynard in game two on Saturday at 3 p.m.
Yeah, I felt very confident about. Yeah, I mean I feel like very very much so. You get those two guys, and you're trying really hard to get. The win on Friday. If you get the win on Friday, then you've got a ton of pitching on Saturday, right, guys, to get that second win?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got the whole staff, really. I mean, you got to play it for free. I mean, you can't go waste pitchers and you know, if you get up big, then maybe you can. But otherwise, you got to play it for free, even if you win Friday.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if you have – Agnos, the longer that he can go, the better off it helps us.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, you're not for Agnos again. If he can go 9 innings, that'd be great.
And then that way you save your pitching for Saturday and potentially Sunday, but definitely it'll be nice to finish off Saturday. Bubba, do you want to go to – we've got a lot of great guests. Do you want to go to our first guest?
Yeah, first let's get a Louisville perspective on things. And we caught up with the Louisville Cardinal baseball beat writer with the Courier-Journal newspaper there in Louisville. And let's now go to our interview with Cameron Teague Robinson.
Taking a look at this matchup, starting off with what are probably going to be the Friday night starters, or Friday afternoon starters, I should say, and that's for East Carolina. AAC Pitcher of the Year, Jake Agnos, 11-2 with an ERA of 2, 140 strikeouts, and then his counterpart, Louisville's ace, Reed Detmers. And Detmers is 11-4 with a 2.96 ERA, and opponents are batting just 176 against him. What can you tell us, Cameron, regarding Reed Detmers?
He's been their go-to guy all year long. Made incredible strides from his freshman year to his sophomore year. He doesn't really he can't overpower hitters, but he just really has great stuff. He locates very, very well. He gets ahead of hitters. And I mean, as you can tell by his opposing batting average, he doesn't allow a lot of hits. So, I mean, Reed has been pretty consistent all season long for them. He struggled his last two outings. I wouldn't say he didn't really struggle in the NCAA tournament, the regional, but Louisville's offense just really didn't hit well for him. He got the loss there, and then he got a loss at the AAC tournament. But he's been their best pitcher all season long.
Yeah, I realize there was one game, I think it was against Georgia Tech, back toward the end of March, where he struck out 16.
Yeah, he can strike batters out. I believe he's third or fourth in the nation right now in strikeouts. He's up around 150. I think it's high 150s. He just broke the school record for singles and strikeouts. So he's a talent for sure.
That will be a very intriguing matchup with him being a lefty. A lot of East Carolina's bats, as I'm sure you may have already found out, are left-handed guys like Spencer Brickhouse and Bryant Packard and Alec Burleson.
Yeah. That's also something Reed also throws people off of being a lefty and having some of the stuff that he has. So that will be an interesting matchup as well. I think that first game will be a big tone setter because you obviously have, like you said, Jake Agnos going against Reed Detmers. That'll be kind of the battle of their both very, very talented MLB caliber aces.
Taking a look at Louisville's lineup, of course, with Agnos being left-handed, what can you tell us about the makeup of the Cardinals lineup? I know one of their top bats is left-handed, and Alex Benales, he's 6'3", 210-pound freshman out of Wisconsin. He's the Cardinals' third baseman.
Yeah, Benales has had a great year, second team All-ACC, freshman All-American. Actually had the walk-off on Monday against Illinois State to send them to the Super Regional, and that was going after 0-4. After that, for the whole day. This is one of the guys with great power, makes great contact on the ball, and is one of those guys who I think a lot of people say they forget their previous at bats that they haven't got at bat, but he generally does. He does a bit like he's the 0-0 throughout the day. But over the course of the last few weeks, Louisville's really struggled against left-handed pitching, so that's what I'm interested in seeing as well, is how they go against Agnos, who's not only a lefty but a very talented lefty as well.
Dave, did you have a question?
No, I do, Bubba. Talk about the atmosphere there at your stadium. The Cardinals, obviously, with a lot of recent success, hosting five Super Regionals in the last 6 years.
Yeah.
How was the atmosphere there? I know you guys draw well. Does it get pretty rowdy in there, or is it more like a okay?
Yeah. It got pretty good this past weekend. Monday was kind of weird, actually, because they played their winner-take-all game at, I think it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They still got a very good crowd for a 1 o'clock in the afternoon game when you think people would be at work. But they drew pretty well all weekend. It was pretty loud all weekend. There was a few people who got some standing ovations, and it was an electric atmosphere. Pretty good and the bad.
The Pirates travel well. We're expected to have several hundred people there, anywhere between 400 and 600. Okay. I think it's the allotted amount for the travel team, and we're expected to sell all those tickets. So should be a nice showing from the Pirates there. We have some history with you guys. Back in the day, we were in the same conference together, back in Conference USA, and actually lead that series. What's the all-time series record, Bubba?
East Carolina leads the all-time series 11-3, but the last meeting, like you said, was actually back in 2012. We played Louisville in a non-conference game down at the University of Alabama in an early season tournament, and that particular year, Louisville was ranked 15th, and Pirates won that matchup 9-4.
So, what is the perception down there coming from the obviously the Louisville coaches are going to respect East Carolina and Louisville's head coach and our head coach Cliff Godwin actually familiar with each other from Ole Miss.
Yeah.
But what is the perception from the fan base down there of this Pirate baseball team?
I think they know East Carolina is a very talented team. I don't think you could be a fan of NCAA baseball and know a team got a number 10 national seed and not think they're talented. Right. I think they know they pose a threat. But I think most of the time everybody is kind of just worried on which – as far as not worried, I should say focused on about on which Louisville team is going to show up. I mean, sometimes they have some defensive lapses, but when they're solid, when they're locked in, they're hitting well, they got strong defense behind them, they are really tough to beat. So I think most of the time I think people here think if Louisville can bring what they're capable of doing onto the diamond, I think most of them think that Louisville should win this series. I do think people expect it to go 3. I don't think anyone thinks that anyone's going to sweep the other team.
Now, taking a look at this matchup, I'm just looking at some of the numbers in general. It's very evenly matched. That's when I know the Cardinals are batting .291 as a team, 51 home runs, 3.65 team ERA, which I believe you may have referenced earlier, Cameron, and then opponents are hitting .214 against them and a fielding percentage of .977. So, and then meanwhile, ECU is batting .298, team ERA of .366, and 977 fielding percentage, and opponents are batting .244 against the Pirates. And East Carolina does hold an edge in the power numbers as they have 70 home runs as opposed to Louisville's 51.
Yeah, Louisville's more of a get the lead off guy on base and play old school there. They're very, very smart base running and make really good contact on the ball. You see them hit a lot of gaps and a lot of balls just through the holes of the infield. Their offense is at their best when they can get a guy either the lead off or the second batter on and then chip away from there.
How does the park play, Cameron? Is it a play like a big park, or is it possible to get some power out there and get some home runs out?
Yeah, you can get some home runs out. There were a few this past weekend. I know Alex Benelis hit a monster shot on Sunday in the doubleheader. Dick Snyder had a home run in the doubleheader. Yeah, you can get some balls out of there for sure.
Preparing for this interview, I was just looking down Louisville's schedule and quite a few common opponents. That's what Louisville took on Ole Miss and took a pair of midweek games from the Rebels at Patterson Stadium. They also swept Duke, a team that the Pirates played in the midweek and split with. They swept NC State in Raleigh, and then they also won a midweek game at University of Cincinnati 12-0. So quite a few common opponents as you look down the schedule. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about, Cameron, is the situation with the Cardinals closer, that four-game suspension. What can you tell us about that?
Nothing really other than that he will be suspended for if the game goes three games, he'll play in the third case. He will not be allowed in the facilities in the stadium for the first two games because of suspension. Kind of crazy scene when that all happened, but that's kind of an NCAA rule. If the pitcher gets ejected for arguing, he's out suspended for 4 games.
And that could be something to really keep an eye on because that's Michael McElveen, and he had appeared in 21 games, 30 and a third innings of work, during which he had allowed just 16 hits and posted 7 saves.
Right. He's a guy who, I mean, you're talking about he comes out of the bullpen throwing 98, 99. I mean, he hit 100 for the first time against Illinois-Chicago. So he comes out and just throws heat. So that's a big loss. But they have arms behind him, or other than him. Mike Kerrion's had a really good year. Adam Elliott is kind of like their mid-innings guy. So you probably see Michael Kerrion in that closer spot. But they got other arms, but losing McElveen is going to hurt for sure.
How's the weather looking? Last forecast I saw for Louisville looked like a big chance of rain both Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, since I've gotten here, I feel like it's rained every day. So it's supposed to rain all week and all weekend. It was supposed to rain all day today, but it hasn't started raining yet. So obviously the forecast can be pretty hit or miss, but it's supposed to rain all weekend.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Let's see. In addition, Kyle mentioned the 500-600 Pirates or what have you that are going to be making that trip to Louisville. What can you tell them as far as, I know a lot of times when East Carolina hosts regionals, there are other events going on with the regional, such as concerts or those sorts of things. Anything like that going on that Pirate fans may want to take a part in?
Not that I know of around the stadium, but there's always a ton of stuff going on downtown. I mean, I don't think there's a weekend that goes by without some concert being going on somewhere or just something going on. So there's obviously things to do, a lot of places to hang out or do things downtown. But I don't think there's anything specifically going on around the campus.
You could always go visit my favorite son of Louisville. The incomparable Jim Cornette. Talk about his place.
Yeah.
yeah.
And Cameron, I know you've only been there a few weeks, but what can you tell our listeners as far as maybe some places to eat or those sorts of things? Have you talked to any of the locals and can potentially recommend some places?
Yeah, I've been a few local places. I went to, there's a place called Hop Cat. It's not really close to the campus. It's probably like 10 minutes on the highway, maybe away from the campus. But it's a pretty good spot, pretty good food. A good beer selection if you're a fan of beer. There's a few other places. I'm a big Raising Cane's fan. When I came from Missouri, they didn't have Raising Cane's, so that's like I had to get Raising Cane's when I got here. And then there was, I can't remember the name of the pizza place that I went to. I think it's like Pelizzari's or something like that. Really good pizza. Really good pizza in town. And then everybody here loves Skyline Chili. I don't recommend it, but if you're a fan of things that, like, if you go into a city and you feel like you need to eat something that is regional, Skyline Chili is regional, but it's not, I don't think it's very good.
It's more of a Cincinnati thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's in Cincinnati, it's like 30, 45 minutes away.
Right.
So it's kind of migrated down here.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Something else I want to ask you, Cameron, you said that you're going to be covering Cardinals football, and so obviously Scott Satterfield, who had been at App State, just done a terrific job there at his alma mater. What can you tell us about what the Cardinals are looking like under their first-year head coach?
Yeah, it's more of a planning for the future type of year for Scott Satterfield. I think they still struggled a little bit this year. They won 2 games last year, and they didn't bring in a whole of talent, which is going to be hard because things were set back a lot when Bobby Petrino left, just with the way he left the program. But it seems like things are changing over. They just got their 6th commitment in the 2020 class. They've really dug in into the kind of Georgia, Carolinas area for recruiting. I think they have about 5 recruits from Georgia of those 6. But mainly the most important thing for them now is just kind of changing the culture, getting people excited about the program again. And it seems like that's happened. I was talking to a few players the other day, and they seem to think that Coach Satterfield is changing things for the better. So I don't know if things will immediately flip in terms of results this year. But I think the plan for them right now is to put down a solid foundation and continue to build on that year after year. I think a lot of people are very excited about that if they'll be in here, though.
Cameron, we really appreciate you joining us on the spur of the moment to talk about this weekend's Super Regional matchup between the Pirates and Cardinals. And we certainly look forward to having you back on this summer in fall to talk Louisville football.
Yeah, definitely. Just let me know. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you very much, Cameron. I appreciate old Cam there. And certainly Louisville, a big-time foe. And it's going to be a tough out for us. But I feel very confident. And I know the guys here on the podcast. And I tell you what, Bubba, another guy that's so confident is Steven Igo. Do you want to talk to him?
Yeah, we were able to catch up with Igo while he was en route to Louisville on Thursday afternoon. And always enjoy chatting with Steven. He does his homework. He's very knowledgeable. And let's go to that interview right now with from hoistthecolors.net, Steven Igo.
Well, it's hard to believe Pirates are going to be in the Super Regionals, meaning the season has been going so fast. With us right now from hoistthecolors.net, Steven Igo. Man, I know you're on the road like Willie Nelson. How's it going?
I'm going good. Just driving out to Louisville, Kentucky. It is a 10-hour drive, and we are making it right now. So excited to to get there and see what this place is all about.
I know you've got your hands on 10-2 right now and keeping it between the lines, so we'll try to do a quick interview because I want to make sure you get there safely, obviously. I just want to get your take, man. It seems like a blur, the season, but as far as the last few days, first off, I'm very excited. I was close. I was off by one. I thought the Pirates would have 6 guys drafted. They had 7 guys, it looks like, right? So I wanted to get your thoughts out of the gate about that.
Yeah, 7 guys drafted, which is the most since 2004. Very happy for all those guys, you know, especially the ones who turned down money coming out of high school to play at ECU, like a Spencer Brickhouse, a Bryant Packard, a Jake Agnos. All those guys had opportunities to go pro coming out of high school, and they turned down that money. They did that and really put their heart and soul into ECU the past 3 years, more than likely. You know, the big guys for sure will be going pro when the time comes. But for now, they're focused on doing what they need to do to get ECU to the promised land, to the College World Series. But, again, happy for all those guys. Also, you know, like a Turner Brown, Evan Bolova, you know, as seniors to get drafted, pretty cool moment for those guys when probably they really didn't know if they would get drafted or not going into the process. So very happy for all 7 of those guys.
I want to ask you a quick question. I thought that because of his injury that, and he may still come back, I don't know, but I want to get, is Trey Benton definitely going in the, as far as like when they get drafted, does that mean that they're not coming back to school or do you think he's coming back next year?
Typically this day and age, there's a good chance if you get drafted that you've already agreed to a number.
Okay.
Or there's an understanding where, you know, they're going to pay him a certain amount. If they draft him and if they end up hitting that amount, he'll probably go. I don't know for sure, 100% certain if Trey will go, but I have to think more than likely he will. Especially getting drafted in the 15th round, which considering his injury is still a pretty big accomplishment. And you know, he has the chance now to rehab at the professional level with top line doctors. And I think it's a great opportunity for him. You know, if he does come back, he will get the chance to play with his brother. But he's going to miss all of next season either way. So I have a feeling that he's likely gone unless they don't meet his number.
And let's talk about the Pirates this weekend. I really feel good about this team. I feel very confident. Do you think, I know they had a tough end of the season in conference tournament, do you think they've got their confidence back?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's hard to win 4 games in 36 hours and not have your confidence back. So I think they're very confident right now. You know, obviously the same can be said for Louisville. You know, ECU came out of the loser bracket. Louisville had to come out of the loser's bracket as well after losing to Indiana, or after losing to Illinois State. They beat Indiana and beat Illinois State twice, so won 3 games in 2 days. So I think they're going to be confident too. I think these 2 teams are very similar. I think they both expect to win. I think it's going to be a tremendous series. Wouldn't be surprised at all if all the games are extremely tight, low scoring, and both teams are balanced. But I do think ECU, confidence-wise, will come in. Now the key is just finding that way to take the momentum of not having the home crowd on the road and, you know, finding a way to still play with that same type of energy, passion, and consistency.
You know, Stephen, one of the things I look at is the both the records. It comes even down to the record is exactly the same, evenly matched for Louisville and East Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, really, the records are the same. Both teams won the regular seasons of their conference. Lots of left-handed hitters in the lineup, lots of left-handed pitchers. There's a ton of similarities. You know, I do think ECU has more power. Louisville has more speed and hits for a higher average. But ECU also knows how to manufacture runs. So you've got kind of a contrast of offensive styles, even though there are a lot of similarities on both sides. So I think it's a very intriguing series. The game I'm looking forward to most. It's a Friday game because it'll be a matchup with 2 of the premier left-handers in college baseball, and Jake Agnos and Reed Detmers, most likely. 2 guys who rack up a bunch of strikeouts. It most likely will be a low-scoring game, and it should be a tremendous pitching matchup.
I wanted to ask you the question on everybody's mind as far as pitching goes when you mentioned Agnos. What do you think as far as Saturday, Sunday? Do you think this will be like a Cooch Maynard, Tyler Smith, or do you put Tyler Smith on Saturday and you may have to rely on him and some other guys, maybe Burleson on Saturday, and then put Cooch on Sunday if necessary?
Yeah, you know, I don't know how exactly they're going to play it. I don't think Cook knows for sure yet. They're still seeing how everybody feels today at practice. But if I had to guess, I think definitely Agnos on Friday, and then after that, it might be to be announced. You look at a guy like Alec Burleson, who could pitch out of the bullpen in game one if you need him. But if he doesn't, you turn around and start game two. I mean, I was talking with Ronnie Woodward of the Reflector earlier, who's making the drive up here with me. And, you know, Burleson is basically their second best pitcher right now. And it's just a matter of whether or not you want to use him out of the bullpen or use him in the starting rotation. The problem is if you use Cooch Manor and Burleson both in the rotation, then you have zero lefties in the bullpen for late game situations, which I don't think is ideal against his lineup.
So I know this is stating the obvious, but Jake Agnos has to, and he knows this, he's got to pitch a really great game, because if he doesn't pitch a good game on Friday at noon, that will really dictate, that'll really hurt us as far as strategy, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, getting off to a start like that in a three-game series is ginormous. I mean, I think if he doesn't go five or six innings, at least he'll be disappointed. But, you know, if you look at the track record, what he's done lately, I think anybody will be surprised if he doesn't go that far into the game. You want to save your bullpen in a series like this, because in game two and three, you're going to have more bullpen matchups. You're not going to have the ace from either side still throwing, more than likely. So definitely it's very important for him to go deep into the first game, and for both sides, not to give up a lot of runs, because if you have one big inning, and a big inning in this game could be two or three runs, it'll be tough to recover from when you're facing that type of pitching. So definitely a huge day for Agnos, and it'll be interesting to see how he responds coming off 4 days rest as opposed to his normal six.
The other big question I had for you is injury-wise, the injury report. Obviously, we've just talked about Trey Benton, but Lane Hoover, have you heard anything on him? I've been dying to ask you that all week.
Lane Hoover is 100% clear to go per Cliff Goblin, the head coach, as of Tuesday's practice. So I know he was close last week for the regional. They ultimately opted to hold him out. And my understanding now is he is 100% able to go, which I would assume swing the bat, throw the ball, run the bases. Probably won't be sliding head first, but more than likely will be out there in some capacity this weekend.
That's really huge. And then, of course, for the regionals, we got Sam Lanier back. And is he okay with his arm? Do you know how he's doing?
Yeah, he looked good, and he bounced back strong from what I've heard. So I expect to see him again this weekend for sure. That was a very big and important outing, getting out of a jam like that after not throwing for basically a month. So I think Sam Lanier will play a big role in this weekend. I don't know how far they want to extend him in terms of innings coming off the arm soreness, but if there's a jam, if they want to get out of a big spot, you know, Sam Lanier is one of the top guys they'll go to, along with Abalaba or Burleson.
What about Gavin? Have you heard about him? Will he be able to? I know one of the things that's been big this year is he's done a lot better with his pitching, not over throwing. Do you think he's good for this weekend, or will he be able to come out of relief a lot this weekend, or what do you think?
Yeah, he should be fine to bounce back. I mean, Monday to Friday is 4 days rest. He only threw 3.1 innings. I guess technically 3 days rest, but if they need him out of the bullpen on Friday, he should be available. If they need him to start, you know, Saturday or Sunday, he should be available. It just depends on how they want to use him. Much like Alec Burleson, Gavin is one of your best pitchers in terms of stuff. And, you know, if they throw everything they have at Louisville, if Gavin hasn't thrown a lot, I wouldn't be shocked to see him get the start. So, but again, he seems to profile more as a bullpen guy in a situation like this. So, big spot in the late innings or middle innings, I expect Gavin to be coming out of the bullpen, especially if he's throwing as hard as he did this past week.
And it seems with these two teams evenly matched, I know this time of year both teams are on fumes. They pretty much have similar resumes. It comes down to, I hate to use the term, but it comes down to want to, right, at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obvious, but I think also it's, you know, both teams I think are going to want it, period. You're going to have guys that are beat up. I think it's more about execution in the key moments. When you have two teams that are evenly matched, you're going to have very few opportunities to take a lead, add insurance runs, with teams that are this good, you've got to capitalize on every single moment you have. If ECU has a runner on third base with less than two outs in the third inning, they need to get that guy home. Those are crucial moments we saw in the Texas Tech series a few years ago against a very good team on the road. If you don't capitalize in those moments when it counts, you're probably not going to win the Super Regional and get to the College World Series. There's so little margin for error when you play a team like Louisville and when Louisville plays a team like ECU that you just can't mess around and not capitalize in those moments. So I think the want to is going to be there from both sides for sure. It's just a matter of who executes in the big spots.
And obviously, coaching is going to play it's going to be, say, a chess match. I'm not trying to be Mr. Cliche today, but it's definitely going to be two great coaches going at it too, right?
Yeah, Dan McDonald for Louisville is easily one of the best coaches in college baseball. I think he's going to be the Team USA collegiate baseball head coach next year, I want to say, or at the end of this year. So a big-time coach. He's led Louisville to five Super Regional appearances in the last 6 years, took him to Omaha four times already. He used to be on the Ole Miss staff before Cliff Godwin was the Ole Miss, so the coaches know each other well. And, of course, Cliff Godwin, a very dynamic coach in his own right, very good offensive coach, hard-nosed coach. And, two tremendous staffs who coach really well, and you've got a guy in Roger Williams on the Louisville staff who is a former Pirate himself as well, so some interesting ties there. I expect both teams to be extremely well-coached and well-prepared for this weekend.
So to put you on the spot with your crystal ball, do you think the Pirates win it?
You know, I got a good feeling, honestly. I think if they win the first game, I think they'll win the Super Regional in two games. I think if it gets to a third game, it'll be difficult, much like the Texas Tech series. But,
right.
You know, heck, who saw them winning the Regional after losing to Quinnipiac in the opener? So either way, I won't be counting them out. I do think ECU, if there's a team that can get there, I think it's this team. I think Louisville won't be easy by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a more favorable matchup compared to a Mississippi State or Vanderbilt or one of those teams as far as Super Regional. So I'm going to predict the Pirates win two games and make it to Omaha.
That sounds good, man. That'll be a dream come true. I've been waiting a long time for the moment, for sure, 46 years old. So, and basketball is another thing. Before we let you go, can you talk about some recruiting real quick? I know we had a big, I saw on hoistthecolors.net, and I want you to promote that as well, that we got a big defensive tackle three-star guy from Shiloh.
Yeah, Javion McCray, a three-star defensive tackle from West Brunswick High School in Shiloh, North Carolina, another Eastern North Carolina kid, comes aboard the ship. He's the fifth 2020 commitment for the Pirates, so a big addition. Another lineman they sorely need. 6'2", 290, can dunk a basketball, which is rare at that size. So great athleticism for his size. He were a few inches taller. He had offers from just about everybody. But not a lot of people get out to Shiloh, North Carolina, to recruit. So I think ECU gets a diamond in the rough here. He's got a couple other notable offers as well, but chooses to stick with the Pirates, and he told me he's 100% committed and will not listen to other schools.
Very excited about that, and very excited about all three, as far as three sports, are the best we've had coaches in a long, long time. Steven, I know you're busy getting ready and driving up to Louisville. How can folks find out more about hoistthecolors.net? I read it every single day. I want people to be like me.
Well, you can go to hoistthecolors.net, of course, or Google up East Carolina, the 24/7 sports site, and we are right at the top. In terms of online coverage and breaking news when it comes to recruiting and all that sort of good stuff. We'll be all over the baseball, Super Regional, and beyond if ECU continues to win. But, yeah, hoistthecolors.net, lots of VIP recruiting info up on the site today with some recent visits and also the McCray commitment. So you can sign up now. You get your first month of VIP coverage for $1 also get 30% off an annual subscription.
That's a steal, man. I tell you what, it's great stuff, and I know people put it on the message board. Thank you for all that you're doing. Certainly you and Sam worked your tails off this weekend. I saw it firsthand. I know how hard y'all worked, but obviously the proof is in the pudding when you see all the stuff on the site. Again, folks, you got to do yourself a favor if you're a Pirate fan. I can't imagine that you wouldn't be a subscriber to. It's kind of like your daily vitamin for Pirates, hoistthecolors.net. Steve and I go, man, appreciate you so much, and hopefully we can talk next week about going to Omaha for the first time.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the kind words as always. Let's hope to do that for sure.
Igo was on the road again. He was keeping it between the lines, driving to 10-2, and certainly with Ronnie Woodward from the Daily Reflector. So I know they made it up there safely, a 10-hour drive from Greenville, North Carolina, to Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm just wondering, guys, I'm going to throw you, Kyle, you're a music nerd. What kind of music do you think Igo listens to? He listens to this podcast, so what do you think Igo listens to?
Man,
I know I put you on the spot. I really don't know. So,
you don't shitty, crappy hip hop.
Yeah. So hip hop.
Crappy, yeah. Well, that'd be any hip hop, but yeah, hip hop.
What do you think, Bubba?
I go listen. So I'm trying to remember the name of that concert they had here recently at the Rockingham.
Oh, that's
I go always goes to. To that event, it used to be in Charlotte, and
yeah.
Now they moved it to the Speedway in Rockingham.
It used to be called Carolina Rebellion.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called now. Yeah, forget I said hip-hop.
Yeah.
I go listen to rock.
Yeah.
There you go. That's my opinion. I go listen to rock.
All right.
In fact, I also remember him talking about going to see Metallica back in January, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, I apologize, Steven. You don't listen to crappy hip-hop. You listen to good hard rock. So,
all right.
There you go. And Ronnie Woodward listens to bluegrass.
Okay. There you go.
Yep.
We settled that. Another great one of our friends, Bubba, I know that's going to do a great job, and I can't imagine if and when the Pirates do win the Super Regional, would be Corey Glore, his call. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, Corey had some excellent calls this past weekend in the Greenville Regional. And I know, like you're saying, I really enjoyed his call on Monday night, going back and listening to it on the way home from the game where he said, let's go to Louisville. So, yeah.
Did you see the video on Twitter?
I did, where they had the camera on him for about the last 3 minutes of the game.
You know, the best part of that? Enjoying his mustache.
Oh, gosh.
Magnificent mustache.
All right, let's go to that interview with Corey Glore, the ECU baseball play-by-play voice. Let's do that now. Well, it's Pirate Super Regional now, and Bubba, we got a very special guest, right?
Yeah, we've caught up with Corey Glore, the play-by-play voice of the Pirates, all season long, and now we're very excited to have him back to take a look at this weekend's Super Regional. Corey, welcome in.
Yeah, can I be called a very special guest if I'm on all the time with you guys? I mean, I appreciate it, but man, I mean, I'm setting the bar pretty low here for the rest of you guys.
Now, Corey, I know you guys got up to Louisville yesterday afternoon, yesterday being Wednesday. So talk a little bit about that and how practice went this afternoon.
Practice went pretty well. They had to move it up because there is rain later on today coming into the Louisville area. The flight here yesterday was very rocky. It was the most turbulent flight I've ever been on in my life, and it was hopefully not an omen of things to come. But, yeah, the team chartered out here yesterday and then just kind of settled in once we got into the hotel and then had an earlier-than-expected practice today. It was only about 12:45. It wasn't that crazy of a practice. But they're down the field for about an hour and a half doing BP, doing in-and-out work, the usual stuff here, and then did a little media availability, and then they – they'll have team dinner tonight, go to bed early, and then they'll be right back at it here tomorrow.
Before we really dive into this weekend, let's take a look back at last weekend's regional. The Pirates obviously dropped that 5-4 decision to Quinnipiac, and then after that, it didn't surprise me that we came back and won the regional, even though just mathematically and with that situation is typically not done, but it was more the way in which we did it, never allowing more than 3 runs in a game and outscoring our opponents 44-11.
It felt like a rallying sort of moment where they could have showed up Sunday morning and said, you know what, our season was the success and that's going to be it and let's go. Or they could have put the pedal down and said, no, we got a lot more we planning on playing for here. And yeah, the cards are stacked against us and the schedule is not conducive to pulling this off, but we're talented enough to do it. And I think you saw a pretty strong response from this team offensively after the Saturday night game. And frankly, for a lot of the games over the last few weeks, I mean, it was a, you know, back up against the wall with a consequence on the line if you could not, you know, put it all together. And they put it all together offensively. And that allowed this pitching rotation to find the pitches they needed to get the job done. I mean, it was all hands on deck in that regard. And for this team to kind of put the entire mix together for four games over 36 hours and do it that emphatically, that's still, to me, just even a few days separated from it, still really remarkable what they were able to pull off there. I mean, teams don't do what they just did in this NCAA tournament. Teams usually aren't put in this position where they have to do something like this, but that's what the schedule dictated. And not only did they do it, they did it emphatically. And that's something that, regardless of what happens this weekend, the fact that they were able to get to this point when they were really up against it, that's a pretty phenomenal achievement.
Can you talk about, Corey, about the pitching? That's what my concern is, the quick turnaround. How do the Pirates, I know they're very deep in pitching, but how do they stand going into the weekend?
Well, they will throw Agnos tomorrow, and I think they were a little bit late on deciding that until after practice today because they wanted to see how he was feeling because he threw 127 pitches on Sunday. And so that's just a very quick turnaround for him with that workload. There was really no other question that he was going to be the guy tomorrow because, one, he is one of the best pitchers in the nation. And, yes, you throw him out there to open up a super regional. Two, with all the other workloads that the pitchers did over those 4 days, Jake was kind of the only option. So, I mean, it was really kind of heading down that path anyway when you're talking about a Jake Kuchmaner or a Tyler Smith or an Alec Burleson or a Gavin Williams, whoever else you might have considered starting for the opener tomorrow here in Louisville. Jake's the guy that has pitched, you know, he did not pitch any of those games on Monday. He did not pitch the late night game Sunday. He was the one that was, frankly, available for Friday. But it's a good one to have available. I mean, it's one of the best pitchers in the country. And you set up with a really high-octane pitching matchup tomorrow. After that, nothing's really been decided about what Game 2 will look like pitching-wise. It is going to be what do we need to do to get Game 1 done. And they'll go from there. But Jake's going to start on Friday, as he probably should be.
Boy, you allude to that high-octane pitching matchup, between UL ace Reed Detmers and Jake Agnos. And Detmers is a high strikeout guy, much like Agnos. He gets it up there at least 92, 93, and seemingly a lot faster sometimes with the way the ball comes out of his hand, according to the scouting report. And he's a guy that has struck out as many as 16 in a game back in late March against Georgia Tech.
Yeah, he struck out 11 in their opener in the NCAA tournament last week. And albeit UIC was actually able to hit him a little bit, he gave up a good handful of runs. But he has some of the most devastating stuff in the country. He's the ACC Pitcher of the Year. He has 156 strikeouts. He is almost a carbon copy of what Jake Agnos is. I mean, these two teams are like mirror images of each other. And that's going to create a pretty fascinating weekend because both teams have dynamite lefty pitching at the top of their rotation. Both of them have great left-handed bats in the middle of their orders. Both of them have had right-handed bats really come through well of late. And both of them had to go on very, very strong tears to keep their season alive this past weekend. So this was a matchup that I feel a lot of people, when the bracket was set, that were these two teams to meet, it would be the most even matchup possible of the field. And that's what we're going to see here play out. We have two teams that are pretty worn down. that should not be starting tomorrow, frankly, but that's what the NCAA dictated, with strength v. strength and weakness v. weakness. And so what it's, you have Detmers and Agnos. There's not going to be a better pitching matchup in this entire Super Regional this weekend. And it's going to be the very first game. And then after that, it's truly going to be the little things that will determine how this regional, the Super Regional, pans out, because these two are so good at doing the same thing against each other.
You talk about these left-handed bats. They're involved in this matchup. Obviously, we know who the Pirates' left-handed bats are, but taking a look at the Cardinals, one of those that really jumps off the page is Alex Benellis. He's a freshman third baseman out of Wisconsin. What can you tell our listeners about him and then some of the other top Louisville bats?
14 homers for Alex Benellis. He sent them to the Super Regional on Monday with a walk-off face knock against Illinois State after they coughed up a lead. And he has kind of taken the reins. He was not freshman of the year, which was pretty crazy in the ACC, but he was on the first team. His ability to drive the ball, he is the home run hitter on this team, and then he is supported by just a bunch of guys around him that get on base with regularity and can run. That's maybe the one discernible difference between these two offenses, is that Louisville does like to run with more frequency than ECU does. So if you have guys like Fitzgerald get on, who is a right-handed bat, but he's one of the best stolen base threats in the entire roster, Justin Levy, who gets on pretty regularly and steals, that sets things up for the freshman who has come through in so many big spots during the course of this season. ECU loves to hit and run. Louisville will do a little bit of hit and run, but also steal more straight up on you. That's the one kind of difference in this offensive attack that the Cardinals bring. But both teams get on base at almost the same clip. Both teams hit the ball at the same clip. The Pirates have been more powerful of late, and Louisville runs more of late. So that's your matchup here offensively.
When we talk about left-handed bats, one left-handed bat that has been absent from ECU's lineup for a few weeks now is that of Lane Hoover. And I heard yesterday Coach Godwin, prior to boarding the plane and heading up to Louisville, said that he is 100% cleared. What can you tell us about Lane? Do you think that we will see him in a starting role or probably more as a reserve?
I'm fascinated by. I don't know for sure, because with the lefties that Louisville will throw out there on the mound this weekend, do you want to put the lefty Hoover back in the lineup? But then the flip side of the coin is, who do you have in place of him? And it's probably going to be a left-handed bat. That's just the way this team is constructed. So how healthy is he? Do you want to put him back in the two-hole against one of the best strikeout guys in the country tomorrow after being off for 11 games? That's a pretty big question for this team. We know what he is when he's in that lineup and how much he really stabilizes the top of that order. There's also the element of this offense found new life starting Sunday. And do you want to move Turner Brown out of the two hole with everything that this lineup was able to put together during the course of that four-game stretch? And do you want to maybe put Hoover in the bottom of the order and not put him in his usual spot? I think he'll be in there in terms of being in the two hole. That's my biggest question, but I think he'll be starting in center field tomorrow.
Another big question coming into this, this weekend, or maybe not so much a question, but one of the points that really stands out is what transpired last weekend. Very unfortunate situation where Louisville closer, Michael McAving, he was suspended for four games following an ejection where he simply, he shouldn't have said it, but he said that's horrible regarding what would have been strike three against Indiana, but umpire didn't take a liking to it and, in my opinion, overreacted and ejected him, and due to the rule, he's now going to be serving games three and four of that four-game suspension.
Yeah, you have the relief pitcher, one of the best in the country, that is not available at the back end of this Louisville bullpen for games one and two. And you saw that creep in their game seven against Illinois State. They had a two-run lead in the ninth and coughed it up. I mean, so now they have very good arms behind him. But if there is one really big question hovering over the Super Regional, it's whether or not the Pirates could get into this Louisville bullpen early, knowing that they don't have this guy waiting in the ninth inning for the first two games. I mean, this is a guy that hits 100 with his fastball. I mean, he is electric stuff. And for an extreme overreaction by an adult who should know better, he doesn't get to participate in the first two games. And that's pretty unbelievable to me. You said he shouldn't have said it. I mean, he's a kid and he was frustrated. As long as he didn't say anything that warrants, like, not being on television or radio, he can say whatever he wants to say. He's a kid, and he's allowed to get emotional and frustrated if he felt something went against him. The guy who's paid to make balls and strike calls behind home plate's got to know better, especially understanding the scenario. But it's a break here for the Pirates if they're able to take advantage of it. They don't have one of the best relief pitchers and closers in the nation waiting for them in the ninth.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, in that situation, I mean, I said that he shouldn't have said it, but it's very understandable that he said it, and given everything at stake, and the guy who's getting paid to do the job of calling the ball game has to handle it better, as you say, no doubt about it. But this series, it gets underway tomorrow at noon on ESPN2. That's a lot of Pirates, and probably a few hundred or several hundred will be making the trip up to Louisville and Patterson Stadium. So what can you tell them about the venue and just the way maybe some things going on and things of that nature? Like, for instance, last weekend, downtown Greenville, or I guess I should say uptown Greenville, had what was called Batter Uptown. Is there anything like that going on in conjunction with the Super Regional?
There's no real event that I'm aware of that Louisville is doing around the Super Regional. The baseball stadium is right across the street from Churchill Downs. And so that's probably the big draw outside of the games for people coming in. It's not just Derby Day here at Churchill Downs. They have races five nights a week. And so that will be a pretty cool bucket list item for, I think, a lot of folks when they're coming up here, is that when you're driving around looking for parking, and that was a struggle initially here when I got here, trying to find parking around this ballpark. But you're going to find a truly hallowed ground of sports right across the street. A truck nearly exploded out here, guys. Sorry about that weird noise that just came through. I think it's fine, but it sounded like it just blew a tire. The campus is very close to where the team is staying at, where there's a large kind of conglomeration of hotels. And then the stadium, the football stadium, is right down in right field. And then you got the racetrack, a kind of kitty corner across from the home plate gate. That's kind of the draw here of this area. But Louisville, I mean, they turned out pretty nicely for the regional. We'll see what the crowd's going to look like for a noon start tomorrow. When they're not too pleased they're starting at noon, much like the Pirates aren't too pleased when they're starting. But it's a place that is smaller than Clark Eau Claire, but can get extremely loud. And so it's going to be a pretty fun environment.
One of the things, I have been able to see that facility, but I have not seen a game in it. Are the bleachers, am I mistaken on this, are the bleachers aluminum? Is that kind of like Texas Tech? Or?
The stands now, all behind the field, all behind the screen, those are all now box seats. They do have bleachers in left field. Those look to be aluminum. Those are just a handful of bleachers, frankly. But they renovated the park a few years ago to put essentially all box seating in place.
Okay, that's one of those things on TV you couldn't tell for sure, and I just remember it seems like Texas Tech that really contributed to the noise the fans were able to make.
Yeah, I mean it was part of it. I will say that, remembering that 16 Super Regional here. I mean that. They won't have as many props, I guess, to get loud with, but they were getting pretty loud in the regional last weekend. And they're used to now hosting Super Regionals. They have been to, I think it's five of the last 6 years they've been in the Super, so they're not stranger to what's about to start here tomorrow, or as the Pirates are for most of these guys. They haven't experienced a Super Regional yet before for the vast majority of them.
Yeah, Louisville has certainly been a fixture in the Super Regionals under Dan McDonnell. And, you know, Corey, that's funny because you think back to the early 2000s, Louisville was in Conference USA with East Carolina. And the Pirates, by the way, hold an all-time
series edge of 11-3, and these two programs have not met since 2012 when they played in the tournament down at the University of Alabama. But this is a Louisville program that was very mediocre at best prior to the last 15 years.
Yeah, the second Dan McDonald took over 13 years ago, he brought them to a College World Series, and then he really hasn't let off the gas pedal since. Dan McDonald and Cliff Godwin know each other very well. They were both assistants at Ole Miss, and they both have worked with Team USA Baseball, not together, but they do have that connection as well. And I mean, these are also two coaches that last year turned down Mississippi State for a head coaching job. They eventually went to Chris Lemonis from Indiana, but these were the two candidates that were on that list prior to him, and they both said no. And so there are some, you know, outside the field storylines that are a little bit interesting to talk about, but I think what we're going to wind up with here, guys, is a pretty tight-knit, intense, super regional between two very even clubs.
Speaking of one of those outside the field connections, or and so you have pitching coach for Louisville, Roger Williams, and so he's a guy that his dad was the coach at East Carolina back in the day, I believe it was, and then he played his baseball at North Carolina, but I believe he was an assistant on Coach O's staff.
Yeah, and Roger Williams, I think not too recently, wouldn't have minded a return to Greenville. I think he tried to make a push to return into coaching form, and that didn't happen. So for two teams that haven't played each other in a long time, that did not link up as American Conference opponents ever, that, you know, they aren't on each other's schedule ever. There are a lot of ties between these two. And frankly, guys, I think you and I, we all discussed it together after the bracket came out, even before the bracket came out. Louisville was the team that a lot of Pirate fans had their kind of in their crosshairs in terms of comparing resumes, comparing quality of teams, and saying we're just as good as them and we should be seated higher than them. And not only were they not, but now they're evened up into a super regional together. So I think it's not going to get probably as many eyes as some of the other supers will, and that's thanks to the TV times. But I'm going to be hard-pressed to find a super regional around the country that's going to have as much going on with it as this one will.
And a little more background, obviously we want to spend the majority of our time focused on this matchup. But longtime Pirate fans recall back when East Carolina was trying to get into Conference USA, not a whole lot of love lost between these two athletic programs and universities because of Louisville wasn't exactly the biggest fan of East Carolina's inclusion in CUSA. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
I was not. I know realignment stuff. Everyone has their own opinions and feelings about conference realignments and who should belong where. So, I mean, Louisville eventually got what they wanted. They got out of the Big East / AAC, and they got into the ACC, and they've had a very large amount of success in the baseball field since joining there, which is a very impressive accomplishment because they leapt up in terms of baseball level, and they have been nothing but contenders ever since. But, yeah, I mean, for old-school Pirate fans who – if they were kind of a little bit more they wanted out of this matchup because of history between these two programs, they're going to get it here this weekend.
And taking a look at some of the other super regional matchups this weekend, some of the things that really stood out to me, and you got the state of North Carolina with three teams in super regionals in addition to the Pirates. You have the Tar Heels and Blue Devils. You also have Mike Martin, who is singing his swan song or writing his final chapter of his coaching career, and Seminoles are really making a late season run and really dominated that Athens regional last weekend. They are going to be down in Baton Rouge at LSU, and then you also have Stanford traveling to Mississippi State and its beautiful new ballpark, which we visited back a few months ago. So those are some of the things that stood out to me. How about you?
Yeah, I had an initial prediction before the year started that it's already not going to happen, which bums me out. But I made the prediction that two programs outside of the quote-unquote Power Five conferences in baseball would make the World Series this year. And we are down to the final 16, and there is only one of those programs remaining, and that's ECU. Everyone else is from those you know, Power Five group, and you got a handful of those in conference matchups that we all were kind of worried about once the bracket came out. You got an Ole Miss in Arkansas, you got a Texas Tech, Oklahoma State. But what you have is a bit of a rarity in that 12 host teams made it out of the regional round. And usually it's closer to a 50-50 split. And a lot of those host teams, including the Pirates and the Cardinals, had to battle out of a loser's bracket and win a game seven in order to do it. So you actually have a bit of a weird scenario where some of the truly best teams in the country will be playing for a World Series. There isn't really a Cinderella that snuck their way in. You know, Duke, Michigan, Florida State, they were all that last four in group, and they are into the Super Regionals. So you can say that they're, you know, a little bit of Cinderella here, but those are all programs that have been pretty good here of late, and it wouldn't be a surprise if they punch their ticket this weekend. You also have the Michigan connection with Keith LeClaire, the head coach up there, who played with Cliff under Keith LeClaire, and there's another possibility of getting a number 23 into the World Series. I mean, there are a lot of interesting things at play here in this Super Regional, and I think we're all pretty happy that ECU is very much a part of it this year.
Yeah, and what you mentioned about the Wolverines, Michigan in the Super Regional down in L.A. against the Bruins, there are going to be three guys wearing 23. Head coach Eric Backich, assistant coach for the Michigan Wolverines, Nick Schnabel, and then also UCLA assistant head coach and recruiting coordinator, Bryant Ward.
Yeah, and then you got Cliff here in Louisville. So, I mean, you have a tree that has sprouted from Keith LeClaire, and they are all making pushes for national titles here this year, and that's pretty great to have happen.
Something we haven't mentioned, but over the last few days, the MLB draft's been going on. Seven Pirates have been drafted. With what's transpired in that regard, anything that's really surprised you?
No, nothing in terms of big surprises. I mean, you know, as the week kind of progressed, the number of Pirates that would potentially get drafted kept growing from what I was hearing. I think it's great that Evan Balaba got drafted as a redshirt senior, and it was Billy Godwin who was, I mean, that was him. He's a scout for the Yankees now, and he recruited Evan to come to Greenville, and the maturation of Evan as a pitcher and as a person. And he battled a ton on and off the field. For him to get a shot with the Yankees, that's great. Like, I mean, it's hard not to kind of, I mean, the old line is, you know, feeling romantic about baseball. That's one of those things where Evan, you know, really, really changed who he was in many respects. And he's paid it off. He's had a great redshirt senior year. And now the guy who really believed in him to come to ECU but never got a chance to coach him, brings him into the Yankees organization and sees what he can develop into as a New York Yankee and part of that organization. He gets to hang out with Jake Agnew still, and we heard, frankly, off-the-record stuff for weeks that the Yankees were really, really interested in him, and that was the case because we would see Billy Godwin a lot at Jake Agnew's games, just kind of monitoring things over. And he had that in mind from the beginning, that he was going to keep an eye on Jake and what he did this year, and he goes in the fourth round. Jake Washer to the Cubs, with, I think, the surge that he's been on over the last couple of weeks, kind of propelled him onto draft boards all of a sudden. And so the fact that he gets a call from the Cubs, Turner Brown gets with the season he's had, gets a call as a senior signee. It was great to see those guys that were outside of the expected three to get a call. And Trey going to the Indians, the 15th round. I mean, that for a kid who just had Tommy John surgery, and understandably, he was worried about what might become of his baseball future. Now he gets a shot to, once he gets back at it and rehabs and gets back in the mound, he can do it professionally with a professional organization. And I think it's a great chance to take if you're an organization like the Indians to go after a kid who we know has the stuff to be really, really good. He's just battled a lot since he came to Greenville, and now is battling an injury. So I'm really happy for some of these kids that not just the guys that we knew were going to get drafted, the Agnoses, the Packards, the Brickhouses, but those guys behind those three that have had great years and great careers and remade themselves in some capacities and are now going to get a shot to do it at a professional level.
Also of note, you have CJ Mayhew, a left-handed pitcher in the incoming class out of Crest High School in Shelby, North Carolina. He was selected, I believe it was in the 36th round, by the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, I mean, and I think now the question will be for anyone drafted in that area, whether or not they'll sign, whether you're a high schooler, whether you're a college kid, and that's a wait and see here for this ECU coaching staff to see if, I mean, they have two guys on their team right now that were drafted and opted not to sign, and Gavin Williams and Christian Jane, and we'll see if another one is added to that mix. I know Jake Agnos's younger brother Zach wasn't drafted, so he'll be coming down, and then Trey Benton's brothers, they weren't drafted, so they'll be coming to Greenville and Wilmington here. So we'll see what happens with the shape of the 2020 recruiting class here. Some decisions and hopefully some wise decisions are made here discussing these kids' futures.
Boy, we certainly appreciate your time, and that's what, obviously, you're busy preparing for the call and enjoying your time there in Louisville. But before we let you go, we wanted to drop a few lines on you. Of course, Louisville, as you referenced earlier, Churchill Downs, and you think of the Kentucky Derby. Another thing that a lot of people probably think of is the hometown of Muhammad Ali. So I have a line or two from Muhammad Ali. One was, "I'm so mean, I make medicine sick."
Okay, I like that one a lot.
So I thought that was a good one that would probably be relatively easy to work in. And another one, and this one's a little bit longer, but, "I'm young, I'm handsome, I'm fast, I can't possibly be beat."
Okay. Okay.
So I thought both of those, especially the first one, but those seem to be like the best fit.
Okay.
And then regarding the Kentucky Derby, this is just more just a horse race in general, but the down the stretch they come, maybe something of that nature would be good.
Okay, sure.
Otherwise, we appreciate your time and enjoy your time there in Louisville, and we hope to be catching up with you sometime next week as the Pirates are making that initial trip to Omaha.
Yeah, that would be a very, very fun discussion to have, and I certainly hope we're having it.
Absolutely. Have a great call, and we look forward to catching up with you soon.
All right, thanks, Jonathan.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, Corey, very much, buddy. Appreciate all that he does for us, and certainly for extra innings all throughout the season. He's been fantastic, and guys, I know there's going to be a tremendous series of Pirates play at noon on Friday. Saturday is going to be a 3, and then if necessary for Sunday, will be at noon. And Kyle, do you remember the networks for people that I'm going to be listening to Corey?
Okay.
ESPN2.
Wait. See if I can guess them. Bubba, you correct me whenever I'm wrong, okay? ESPN2
gotcha.
For Friday at 12.
Correct.
ESPNU Saturday at 2.
Saturday at 3.
Saturday at 3.
But ESPNU is correct.
And Sunday, if necessary, is it 2 on ESPNU?
It's at noon on ESPN2.
I screwed it all up. All right, Bubba, go ahead and tell everybody the time.
Friday at noon on ESPN2, Saturday at 3 on ESPNU, and Sunday, if necessary, at noon on ESPN2.
There you go. I know you can do it, Bubba. All right, guys, let's touch on the series movement that got announced this week.
Oh, yeah.
By John Gilbert that to replace Virginia Tech next year. We had a road game with Georgia State moved up to 2020.
Yep.
It was previously scheduled by one Jeffrey Comfer. And now to replace the Hokies, we will be playing at Georgia State next year. Who, by the way, anybody who's listening out there is wondering, yes, Georgia State is FBS, or 1A, as you probably call it, if you don't realize they're FBS. And they play in the Sun Belt Conference. They're located in Atlanta, Georgia, and their football stadium is the old Turner Field, former home of the Atlanta Braves, which really isn't that old. It's amazing that they built another new stadium. When was Turner Field built? 96, guys? Was it built in incorporation
with
the Olympics?
So 23 years.
Yeah, so the University, Georgia State University bought that, renovated it, turned it into a football stadium. So it'll actually be a pretty cool road game next year in terms of getting to go to Atlanta. It's a good exposure in that area for recruiting. And it's a cool stadium to play in.
Yeah, that's what I have. A couple of at-state friends that went down there for the Mountaineers game against Georgia State this year, and they said it wasn't a bad venue at all. I mean, it just kind of a unique setup because it was obviously originally intended to be for the Olympics and then baseball, not football. So,
right. But, you know, prior to that, they were playing in the Georgia Dome, which was terrible for them because it was cavernous. They don't draw but so well. I'm not sure what that place sits now for football. I'm guessing. Do you know, Bubba? Did they get rid of some seats?
Yeah, I'm trying to recall right offhand. I think, to be honest with you, I think last year or a couple years ago, what it sat was actually not what it's going to eventually seat because they hadn't had a chance to do everything they were going to do as far as some renovations. But I want to say that it's right around 30,000, something like that. It was very, very very similar to something like Grove Stadium at Wake Forest or Wallace Wade. So it was a good sized stadium for Georgia State. Certainly more seats than they have needed up to this point.
Right.
And like you said, I couldn't agree more with you as far as they're much better off playing in that facility than the cavernous Georgia Dome back in the day, or now what is Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Correct. Yeah, that's not good at all. So, yeah, they got their own little stadium there, Turner Field, and then they'll come here in, what is it, 2028? Is that when that was moved? No, moved up, 2027?
Yeah, it was supposed to be 2028, and then got bumped up to 2027.
Okay.
Just like this one was originally supposed to be, what, 2023?
Yeah.
And now it's 2020.
Correct. So it'll be interesting to see what we do with those other dates with the Hokies. And now with the date in 2028 open, that we would have been playing Georgia State. So there's some dates there to play with.
So, like you said a lot, kind of as far as the jury being out on John Gilbert and his scheduling abilities. So we'll,
correct.
We'll see. So now that gives him some time to work, whereas whereas his hands were tied for scheduling something next year. So I like that decision to move the game to 2020, and then it gives us some time to solidify or procure something that's a little more appealing.
Right.
I think that's what I was going to say. Is I think that Georgia State, you know, Kyle and I have talked about this numerous times, but Kyle especially, and of course myself, we were not big fans of Confer. But the one thing that I will
Bubba
say that I thought
him.
He did. Oh, I know. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Bubba, you did love him. But the one thing I will say he did a decent job of is scheduling. I didn't think his scheduling was really as bad as all the other decisions.
Yeah, he did an all right job scheduling.
It could have been way worse.
Yes, I agree.
Considering how he did on everything else.
Nobody, with the exception of maybe Ruffin McNeil, hated Jeff Confer more than me. So, but I do think that's one thing he got too much criticism on. I think the Boise State series is good. I think BYU series is good.
The Appalachian State series is good.
Marshall series is good. Wake Forest series is good.
I don't see why people are so anti Marshall when Marshall's
a
good
opponent. It's a handful of people that like to run their mouth. And talk out.
I'm not anti-Charlotte as well. I think Charlotte is a good decision.
Well,
the biggest complaint I had with Jeff Confer regarding scheduling is the deal with South Carolina.
I agree with you.
Outside of the deal with South Carolina, like the deal with Marshall and obviously BYU, Boise State, and a bunch of those, Wake Forest.
Even Georgia State makes some sense.
App State.
Do we have Jeff Comfort on the line right now that can talk to Kyle and Dave and Bubba for the all the time we have on scheduling? I mean, Jeff, are you there on the line?
Well, Dave, I just wanted to thank you for being complimentary of me on my scheduling abilities. You know, I'm living down here in Florida now, and me and Shelly, well, actually Shelly's still in Greenville. I miss her. But, you know, I did a great job scheduling for the Pirates, and I wasn't very appreciated. But, you know, now I'm, that's good. I can't even do it good right now. I got a cold.
Anyway, you guys get the point. The point is that
Shelly to turn down the Orange Bowl.
That again?
No, I started to say, Jeff, would you tell Shelly to please turn down the television? I can hear the Orange Bowl, the 2012 Orange Bowl.
Correct. Yeah, Shelly needs to turn down the TV. That's right. It's a little loud there.
Well, I tell you what, I'm excited about the series tomorrow, and certainly with the Pirates. And I was I've been talking to folks, including, by the way, Kyle, my barber, who says he's predicting. I'll tell you, his name is Kenny. Kenny's predicting a big win over NC State August 31st.
Well, if Kenny's predicting it, then, I mean, had you bar the door.
At Russell's Hair Salon. Russell's Hair Salon. He says he knows.
Kenny, God Almighty. I mean, it's freaking Kenny at Russell's.
I know. I mean, he's legendary. He's been talking sports there for 32 years. I mean, how can he go wrong?
I go ahead and lock it up in Vegas.
Well, what he's saying, he's saying
the points.
Yeah, he's saying like Logan that NC State, the people, they don't take East Carolina seriously, and he's saying that you know, with Houston and crowd, now that he's taken over, obviously if it was Montgomery, it would be an automatic L.
Correct.
But with Houston having a whole summer, pretty much whole year, they lose to, you know, JMU loses a close game they should have won. I brought that point up to him. He feels like NC State's going to lose to the Pirates. So
well,
I told him I think it's going to be a loss, but you never know. I mean,
I hope the hell Kenny's right, and we beat the Wolfpack Labor Day weekend.
Because I told him if we beat the Wolfpack on August 31st, we could have more wins in the first month, and even still, without beating NC State, than Scotty had in a single season.
Oh, absolutely. Well,
Dave, something else of note. Mike Houston and staff got another commitment for the 2020 class. This is our fifth commitment. A kid, Javion McCray, out of West Brunswick High School in Shallotte. He's 6'1", 285-pound defensive lineman, and he also had offers from Air Force, Charlotte, Coastal Carolina, Liberty, and then quite a bit of ACC interest.
Tulane also offered him, correct?
Yeah, also Tulane offered him.
For the American.
Yeah, he's got a lot of uptick, and I think Bubba and Kyle and I were talking his – he's only, 6'2", so his maybe if he were 6'4", 5", he'd have more offers.
Yeah, depending on where you see him listed, 6'1", 6'2", 285 pounds. I'm guessing it's Javion McCray. It's J'VIAN.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, look, Tulane's offer, Willie Fritz is a hell of a coach.
Yep.
And, out at Air Force, you got a
Troy Calhoun.
Yeah. I wanted to say Fisher DeBerry. Troy Calhoun, out at Air Force. Both are quality coaches. Both, you know, you got to make good grades. You got to be an intelligent kid to get into Tulane or the Air Force Academy. So the kid's smart. If Troy Calhoun and Willie Fritz want him to play ball,
he's a baller.
He's a smart kid, and he's going to be fundamentally sound. So, Mike Houston's another smart coach, like those two guys. So I think it's a good get.
Very good get, especially when my philosophy on recruiting is you get the best guys in Eastern North Carolina, North Carolina, and then the region. And then if you have some
nationally. Yeah, what nationally, do you consider Shalhoub? I mean, Shalhoub is the coast. I mean, he's certainly eastern. He can't be any more eastern.
Southeast.
But, yeah, it's definitely – I don't know what they consider themselves. It's definitely not eastern North Carolina as in the heart of eastern North Carolina.
No, it's
so,
barely.
I mean, what it's barely in North Carolina. I mean, what is that area? I know, obviously, I know geographically it's southeast, but if you're from that area, what do you guys call yourselves? I mean – do you guys call yourself the Wilmington area? Do you say we are southeastern North Carolina? Is there a name for that region?
I don't know. I've never heard.
Bobby, you vacation down there a lot. Do you know?
Yeah, Oak Island.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure.
Now we're gonna have to figure this out.
Yeah, we got to find out.
Okay, well, Wilmington area and South Pirates. Well, what is that area known as exactly? Does it have a name? You know,
I don't know.
Does everybody know except us three?
But in my case, I'll speak for myself. Probably so. I know the area a little bit, but not as much.
I'm
as
very
does.
Familiar with the area. I've never heard it referred to as a. You know, you got very specific. Eastern North Carolina. You got the Sand Hill area. Everybody knows
right.
The Sand Hill area.
Piedmont.
Fayetteville area, Sand Hills. You
right.
got the Piedmont. You got the Eastern Piedmont.
Right.
You got the Triangle. You got the Triad. You,
right.
you know, you got the Queen City area. You got
sure, yeah.
yeah. You got the mountains. You got the high country in the mountains, the Boone area.
Right.
Well, what the hell is that area called?
And then you got the Asheville area.
Right.
In the southern
part. Well, yeah, that's just something called the Asheville area, and then.
Right.
You know, I've never, until recently, with all my trips to Roanoke Rapids here recently, I never realized that is referred to as the Roanoke Valley of North Carolina. I don't know. So, anyway, we got off track here.
Well, you know, that's what makes this podcast just extra special, extra gold, a podcast gold for, you know, anybody can get the material from anywhere, but they get to hear our great personalities, right?
I guess.
Well, Kyle, according to a map that I found, it just simply says southeast because it has the mountains, it has Metrolina, you know, which is Charlotte, it has the Piedmont Triad, Winston-Salem, Greensboro, it has the Triangle, it has the Sand Hills, it has the Inner Banks. And then it has the Outer Banks.
Yeah, you know, and I don't like the Inner Banks term. To me, that's Eastern North Carolina or Eastern Carolina. No one says Inner Banks. That's stupid.
I always prefer Eastern North Carolina because I think
I don't
think it makes sense to say Eastern Carolina because then all you're doing is confusing people.
Yeah,
Eastern North Carolina.
I agree.
Eastern North Carolina.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I've never said Eastern Carolina ever.
That drives me crazy when you hear the local news people
talking about
the latest happenings in Eastern North Carolina. I mean, in Eastern Carolina,
people that are from like the Triangle area, they say down east. So I have no problem with it. You know, like that down east is fine, and Eastern North Carolina is fine.
I'll tell you a funny story before we wrap this podcast up. If we sit around the campfire here, and
all right.
I down east wood duck.
Yep.
There was a competition, okay?
Yep.
To name the Wood Ducks.
I remember it very well. I participated in it.
I participated in it too. Now, here's the interesting part. I suggested Down East Cannons.
Yeah, okay? I know you told me.
All right. Now, I also tweeted at our former mayor and suggested that, you know, he approach the Wood Ducks about calling us Down East instead of Kinston to appeal to the entire region. Now, the winner of the contest, whoever said Wood Ducks, got free season tickets, I think for life, or maybe it was just for the first season.
For the first season.
I suggested Down East. They used Down East. Okay. I also suggested it to our mayor. Okay, and he said it was a great idea. Then I never heard anything else about it. Now I didn't get a damn thing. I didn't even get recognition. I didn't get a tip of the hat. You didn't get to throw out the first pitch.
Either?
Yeah, I didn't throw out the first. I didn't. I don't even know.
Oh my god! They didn't have a special parade.
But I'm telling you, the Down East was my idea. Now, so if you hate it, blame me. If you love it, then praise me. But the Down East,
my damn tickets.
The Down East was my idea, and I'm just saying. And people can say, "Well, that's not original." There was some thought there. I mean, I'm telling you, they stole that from me and gave me no credit. And I'm just saying, Wood Ducks, you owe me.
What about, I had a really lame one looking back. I was trying to.
Not you, Dave.
No, not at all. I was trying to, they said, come up with a theme for the region. So with Kinston and the Kinston Global Transport, I said it should be named the Kinston Jets. I just thought you could do a lot with, like, airplanes.
That's not really lame.
That was my entry, so.
That's not lame. I can see that. But what would the logo be? A great big empty landing field?
No, I just thought, like, you could have, like, a jet on the hat. I don't know. I was, like.
That was a shot at the Global Transport.
No offense
to Alan Thomas at all. Or any of my other good friends that work at the Park.
I'll take a shot. Anything the legislature does, they don't fund anything east of Raleigh except for the coastal.
That's correct.
So maybe a med school. Oh, I'm sorry. So anytime that it's east of Raleigh, they don't fund anything. Maybe they fund stuff, for their beach house or something. Other than that, if it's anything in between the Outer Banks, anything in between Morehead City and
95,
anything that they don't do it. So, if you want something to be successful, like the Global Transport, then can you fund it? There's a thing called roads infrastructure. Can you like build roads? It's kind of funny, and I'll say this, and I'll move on so we can get out of here. But speaking of the transport. Everybody talks about how it's been a failure. If they had done the same funding that they had done to Research Triangle Park, the Research Triangle Park back in the day would have been a failure. And I'm sorry, but it was so close to Raleigh and so close to the Triangle that they did the right thing. So I'm calling all the legislators out. I don't care what party you're from. They never have given it a chance as far as funding and building the roads and the infrastructure it needs to make that work. So. If you're not going to fund it, they just scrap it. That's what I say.
No, I agree with you.
Because they don't care about it, and it's just it's a joke to them, but yet they haven't done anything to do it. So that's a lesson for the legislators in Raleigh. You need to fund stuff, and if you don't fund stuff, then why are you doing it if you're not funding it? So I'll leave it at that. So I'll be generic and not go on my soapbox anymore.
Gotcha.
Bubba, you got anything before we go?
No, I'm just looking forward to the game tomorrow and series this weekend. Hopefully celebrating that first trip to Omaha on either Saturday or Sunday.
What about you, Kyle?
I know. I pretty much said everything I wanted to say. Looking forward to the regional, the super regional this weekend, and hopefully get ready to go to Omaha.
All right, before we wrap it up, how can folks find the podcast?
So you can listen to us, obviously, where you are right now. You can also listen on SoundCloud and Audio Boom, and Google Play Music. You name it, you can probably find us there. Tune in.
iHeart. And we have a new one, folks, radio.com. You can hear the great podcast.
And then also follow us on social media, on Twitter at eSportsOBJ, on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow our Facebook page. Write us a review. We have quite a few new followers and likes on our Facebook page. But if you would write us a review, let us know what you like about the show, and we'd really appreciate that. And then also subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel has been growing quite a bit, and we had some new videos, like 6 or 7 videos from Monday night, and then
one or two from Saturday night. For instance, when Alec Burleson struck out the side against Quinnipiac. And then also one of the traditions this year that ECU Marketing created at Clark LeClaire was in the fifth inning, in the middle of the fifth, they had what's called the safety dance. And so there's a video on our YouTube channel of that, and it's already approaching 2,000 views.
Hey, does anybody know who sang that song in the year?
It was the year 1986.
Nope.
It was the year 1988.
Nope.
It was the year 1984.
You're close.
It was the year 1985.
Nope.
It was the year 1983.
I thought I would play The Price is Right. That is correct, sir.
And it was sang by REO Speedwagon. It was sang by Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show. No, it was sang by You Can Dance If You Want To. It is a
English band. You are correct about that.
Let's see, not Duran Duran.
No, it was not. They had two hits. So,
Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Nope. I'll tell you whenever.
The Beatles.
No.
It's three words.
That's correct.
Three words? Oh, Bubba looked this up.
Yes, I looked it up.
Three words.
What are you?
What are you? That's the name of the band?
No.
Women, but.
What?
We're trying to help you out. We're trying to play 25,000 Pyramid with you.
I'm a man.
Not man, but what? More than one man is called what?
A men at work?
No, but you're quote, you're getting there. Men.
Boys to men.
Are you wearing a hat right now?
I know it's not Boys to Men. Am I wearing a hat right now?
Yeah.
No, I'm not wearing a damn hat.
So that means you're a man without a hat. So Men Without Hats is the name of it.
I don't remember them.
It's the only song I know that has the word imbecile. That's why I like it. And,
well, imbecile. I like it too.
Yeah. I feel like an imbecile right now.
You can dance if you want to. You can dance. You can dance.
Doesn't take much to extract a little language out of Kyle.
Exactly.
You can dance if you want to. You can dance.
No, I'm not wearing a hat right now. What kind of stupid question is that?
Men Without Hats. All right, so folks, your homework, you had to find out Men Without Hats. What is their other hit, Kyle?
Their other hit was Men Without Pants.
No, actually, they're playing, it's like a detergent commercial now. Pop Goes the World.
I thought it was you can sit if you want to. You can sit if you want to.
Oh my God. All right, folks, we're going to get out of here before
you can
Kyle.
Sit if you want to.
Before we lose any more listens, more people listen. Or Bubba from LaGrange. Bubba LaGrange.
And Kyle from China Grove.
Kyle from China Grove.
I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.